Iowa is a wonderful place to grow things, but many of us wish our growing season was just a little bit longer. Today, we'll talk about extending the seasons, starting early and growing later. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here, along with Denny Schrock, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator. For as long as there have been gardens, people have been trying to figure out how they can plant earlier and keep things growing longer. Today, we'll talk about some of the methods that can help you accomplish that. Richard and Denny will also answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this amazing spring weather could trick all of us into thinking otherwise, but we know that we have more cool weather to come before the growing season really gets underway. This hour, we'll talk about ways to make the season a little bit longer. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And Denny Schrock, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator, is here. Hello, Denny.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Well, thank you both for being here today. And this is something people have been trying to do since pretty much the beginning of time, make the growing season longer. But there are some technological advances that have taken place, right, Denny?
That's true. Of course, you know, one option certainly is, you know, move to South Florida or Costa Rica, and then you have a long growing season. But short of that, there are other things you can do. Greenhouses have been around for a long time, but if we're probably talking today more about some of the smaller things that gardeners might do. Commercial growers in Iowa have gone to high tunnel production, which is basically a greenhouse frame with plastic stretched over it, but no heating system. And they can usually get a month or 6 weeks earlier production out of that, because what we're really trying to do is get a good early start on the season and get through that one or two frosty nights we have that zap the plants that you've stuck out early.
Right. So when you do, again, let's talk about what kind of investment you would need to make to do something like that. I mean, most small-scale gardeners aren't necessarily going to go to that.
Right. So the commercial people are spending several thousand dollars to do their high tunnels. So home gardeners can do what is called a low tunnel very cheaply for something in the range. I looked at catalogs yesterday and I found a low tunnel for $25. So, you know, it's a 9 foot long covering about 2 feet tall with plastic over it. So, you know, that might be worthwhile getting your a month and a half early of lettuce and spinach and some of the cool season crops.
And with a low tunnel, how do you harvest? I mean, is it easy to get in and out of there?
Usually that low tunnel would be something, yes, you're not going to be able to crawl in to get to it, but you can roll the plastic up on the side so you can reach in from the bottom that way. Typically, you're going to need something that has some venting to it as well, because as you can well imagine, on a sunny day like today where we're going to be in the 60s and 70s, it could get to be 110 inside that low tunnel. So you may need to have that option to roll up the sides on a bright sunny day like this. Some of them have the plastic that actually has pre-drilled holes or slits in it that allows for a little bit of that excess heat to vent. But definitely you want to have something that you can roll up the side so you can easily harvest and control that high temperature that might develop.
Now, this has to do with tomatoes, I think, primarily. But I know people who have been putting out plastic milk jugs over their tomato plants forever. Is that the same kind of idea?
It's much the same idea. That plastic milk jug would be a homemade version of something that's called a cloche. Cloches have been around for centuries. It actually comes from the French word for bell, because the original cloches were bell-shaped jars that were put over plants that are set out early. And they have some of the same problems that the low tunnels would, in that they overheat. So if you have a solid glass jar, that's not so great, because about the only thing you can do is prop it up and hold it up with a can or something like that so you get some heat escaping. With the milk jugs, you at least have the little vent on top that some of the heat comes out of there. So there are other things like hot caps that have been used for a long time. And some of the limitations of those are that...
What are those?
Oh, the hot cap is basically a paper or paper mache type of little cap, if you will, that you place over a plant. They're usually only about 8 or 10 inches tall. So mini tomato plants are too tall for that type of thing. But something like a little spinach plant is going to be fine under there, or a broccoli plant might be fine for a while.
Now, when you look at season extenders online or in the garden catalogs, the Wallow Water is one that seems to be everywhere right now. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, the Wallow Water actually is one of the more effective ones because there are a couple other brands that do much the same thing. There's one called Cozy Coat and one called a Frost Jacket. But basically what they are is a series of water-filled tubes that make a ring. So you fill up each of these individual tubes with water, and as they become filled with water, they kind of collapse in on themselves to create a little bit of a tent, but it still has an opening at the top. So you have that automatic venting, if you will. And the water acts as a heat sink. So it collects the heat of the sun during the day, and at night the water won't cool off as quickly as the air does, so it keeps the plant warmer at night. And there are claims, I won't vouch for it, but the claim is that it will protect plants down to 16 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm not sure I would trust it quite that low, but certainly it will be fine down to the low 20s. So you probably can get at least 10 degrees of frost protection out of those Wallow Waters. Now, I wouldn't recommend planting tomato plants out yet, even though you can protect them with that. It's likely to have much slower growth just because we've got cool temperatures.
With something like that, you're pretty restricted as far as a space. So, I mean, if you were thinking about trying to use it for greens, that seems like that really wouldn't work very well.
Right. If you're wanting something like greens that have low growing and wider space, you're probably better off using something like a floating row cover. The floating row cover is a spun-bonded polypropylene fabric. For the seamstresses out there, it's a lot like interfacing. They probably can relate to that. It lets in air and water, but holds in some of that heat. And you can either use it directly as floating right on the crop, or you can put a little bit of a wire hoop over it so that it doesn't rest right on the crop. And that will give you usually somewhere like 3 to 5 degrees of frost protection. And most greens are pretty frost tolerant anyway, so we just need to protect them from getting down into the mid-20s.
All right. Now, when you talk about a floating row cover, something else that you see and have seen for many, many years, of course, are people putting out their garden sheets. I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah,
bed sheets is what I was trying to say there.
Yeah, yeah. The bed sheets or blankets or whatever, it's the same principle, but usually the fabric materials like that don't have as much light penetration allowed, and they're heavier in weight, so they can actually mat down the crops. So unless you're putting a structure out there, it may actually collapse the crop. And if it rests right on the crop, you can get some frost damage right where the crop comes into contact with the row cover. That's where the advantage of the floating row cover is. It's much lighter weight and won't damage the crop.
All right. And you don't have to build your own structure, and you don't have to put your bed sheets outside.
Right, right.
So there are a number of benefits. When we talk about some of these systems to get the growing season started earlier, are they also effective later in the season?
Yes, most the ones at least that can cover a large area. Now, something like a hot cap is not going to be very effective in the fall unless you've started a fall crop of something that's still quite small at that point. So, and a milk jug too. You're not going to be able to cover your tomatoes in September with a milk jug.
No.
Unless you have a 500-gallon one or something. So usually in the fall, we're dealing more with the larger area ones like the floating row covers or the low tunnels that might be effective in the fall.
Now, I think we all get a little excited when we go to the garden center, or when we look at these catalogs and maybe sometimes buy into a little bit of hype. So how do we protect ourselves from buying something that is not going to be useful? Where do we get information as to whether it works or not, besides Horticulture Day?
Well, yeah, besides Horticulture Day. There are a lot of extension publications online. So if you just Google season extenders and make sure that you get a site that has an EDU at the end of the URL, you're likely getting an extension publication that will have research-based information so you know that it's not just someone trying to sell you that particular product.
All right. And are there any season extenders that you've already implemented in your garden this year?
I haven't put out any of my season extenders. I've been looking at, unless I count my raised beds as a season extender, and in the broadest sense of the term, you can do that, because I notice that my raised beds are drying out much faster than the surface ground, so I can start planting a lot earlier in those raised beds. So I was actually thinking this next week during spring break might be a good time to get some things planted.
Such as?
Such as, I'll be planting probably some of my peas, some of my spinach, some of my lettuce. May stick out some of my onions this early, too. I know when I was growing in Colorado, the commercial growers would typically plant their onions in February in Colorado.
All right. So maybe it's time. Of course, we don't know what is yet to come this spring. I remember so clearly, was it 3 springs ago when spring came so early, and then we had that late frost and all of the blossoms on the cherry trees and the peach trees and all of those blossoms.
Yes, that certainly was the case. I think we didn't have any frost at all through the month of March or April until about the 20th of April or something
right,
like that. And then
right.
Just hit it. And that's why some of these bigger season extenders are really very helpful. Because you could get, I think the temperature got down into the 20s at that point, so we probably could get that amount of frost protection out of some of these floating row covers and row tunnels.
All right, well, before we get to the break, Helen is on the line in Ames. Hi, Helen.
Hi, I just wanted to tell him a couple of things I've done. It doesn't cost much money at all. I've done it for years. I don't think they put out the metal 3-pound coffee cans. I take a can opener, take off the bottom because the top's already open. I put that over my tomato plants, which I plant May 15th. Then I take a gallon milk jug and cut the bottom off of that and put that over top of it. That works wonderful. And then what I do with my seeds, because I've tried them in the house 100 times, I found out if I buy some good soil and mix it with my soil and plant my seeds out there, my tomatoes come up just like that.
All right. Well, Helen, thank you so much for sharing your methods.
And it doesn't cost much at all. Nothing like row crops or plastic or anything. I've done it for 25 years and I've never failed.
All right, Helen, thank you so much for your call. And you can join the conversation with your questions when we get back from the break. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Denny Schrock, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Denny Schrock, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. I know a lot of us are getting excited about getting our hands dirty. A lot of us have already started getting our hands dirty. You can call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I got these seed catalogs, I'm getting excited. Anyway, they are advertising peach trees, and also I saw almond trees that says they'll grow anywhere you can grow peaches. Can I grow peaches in northern Iowa?
No.
Not
really.
That's what I thought.
We can probably grow those somewhat, let's say, south of Highway 30 in Iowa. But even in that region, if we have a cold winter, you can have severe dieback. But in Mason City, basically north of Highway 20, not really. They're just not that reliably hardy,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. one quick question. That, how about hazelnut? Will they do all right here?
You can grow those, yes, yes.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Tom. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Eldon is up next in Atkins. Hi, Eldon.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I had a question about the black plastic. I've tried putting that over, you know, hoping that the black nut would save plants from the frost, and almost makes it worse. Is there a reason behind that?
Yes. What happens is what's happening during a frost, at least in certain types of frost, is what's called radiation cooling. And if you've got a still night and black temperatures actually radiates heat faster than white or light surfaces. So, yes, you are actually increasing the damage by putting black plastic. So it needs to be white or clear plastic.
Okay. Another thing that my mom used to use, and she used to put tile around her tomato plants, I think, for the cutworms, and it also, I think, probably collected heat during the daytime to prevent it from freezing.
Ceramic tiles like that we used to see in the fields?
Like drain tile.
Okay.
Yeah, that definitely would work. You know, stone or ceramic, anything like that, cement actually does collect heat during the day and radiate at night. So in addition to just the physical protection, it will actually increase the heat locally a little bit.
And would it actually protect from cutworms? I mean,
the cutworms, the collar around it usually needs to be pretty close, because they're going to come up, if, you know, an 8-inch tile, they can come up in between the tile and the plant and still get the plant. So the cutworm protection needs to be right next to the stem.
All right. Here is an email from Glenn in Janesville. He says, given limited space, can I grow potatoes successfully in a mesh cylinder?
Yes, I've seen potatoes grown in lots of different things. If he would have a mesh cylinder, he probably wants to have some sort of landscape fabric or something like that to keep the soil from falling through the cylinder. But I've seen something like that where you'd line a chicken wire mesh cylinder with landscape fabric, fill it with soil or compost, plant your potatoes in there, and actually you can plant the potatoes on the surface and add a little more soil or compost or straw on top. The potatoes will grow up through it, and it makes the harvest really easy too, because you can pull the cylinder off and just dig the potatoes off. You don't have to really dig in the soil, just pull them out.
All right. Sounds like a great idea. Let's get another email question here. This one is from Megan. I have a very large tree planted in an 8x8 raised bed. I would like to make the entire raised bed into a bench around the tree. Will covering up the base with the new seat hurt the tree? It will prevent most water and sun from getting to the base.
I'm not quite clear as far as what she wants to do on that.
If I'm understanding it right, I think she's just wanting to build a seat that surrounds the raised bed. And as long as I can't imagine that the seat she would build would be totally impervious to water and air. There's going to be gaps in the, if she's using boards or decking or something like that, there should be water and air getting down to the root zone. The main thing she wants to do is make sure she's not damaging the roots themselves. Something over the roots that is not going to disturb the roots should still be getting the moisture and air, so that shouldn't damage the roots anymore.
All right. And now, as long as the tree is planted in the raised bed and you're not putting the raised bed on top of where the tree is planted, right?
I mean, correct. That's correct.
Because that would damage the tree.
That yes. would, yes.
All right. Here's an email from Riley. We've had some trouble with a wild rose bush in the past. Owners planted in front of the house. It has taken over the surrounding plants, and we would prefer to get rid of it. What's the best way to do that?
I think you have two options. One is to physically dig it up, and that's possible. The other option would be to use something like Roundup. So those two options.
All right. And if you dig it up, what do you need to watch for to make sure you got the whole thing?
Well, you want to get as much of the root system as you can. And the reality is you may not get it all, so you may have to come back at a future time and dig it up again. So you just have to be maybe persistent.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Dan is on the line in Webster City. Hi, Dan.
Yes, hi. I've been in and out of my car, so I've missed some of what you've talked about here. But Last summer, we planted, and they got most of the season, a hardy hibiscus and a hydrangea. And so I did my best at preparing them for winter, and I packed some kind of translucent empty buckets from different things with leaves and put them over the clipped stump of the plants.
Okay.
And I'm hoping they're going to come up this spring, and I'm wondering if I did the right thing.
Well, that probably provided some protection. I would probably leave that in place for another couple weeks or so, because Iowa weather is always very erratic, and it could get cold again. And those plants, if they start to grow early and then we have a frost or freeze, they could be damaged. So I would be inclined to leave it in place for another 2 weeks or so and then remove it.
Okay.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions today. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can also tweet your questions at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dennis is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, hi. Thanks to Public Radio and your guests. I'm getting some tips here. But I just want to mention I did attend a session with Master Gardeners couple evenings ago at Ladd Library about container gardening, and I just wonder where people stand on that. I had a question of the presenter there that they're recommending vermiculite and perlite in the mix for preparing the garden, the soil for use in container gardening. And thinking back, vermiculite is associated with asbestos, and this was recently aired on Public Radio about concerns with the use of it in the past of insulation and all that. And I did speak to the presenter after, and he said Iowa State is looking for an alternative to the vermiculite and perlite. And he'd mentioned, too, that also usable is just simply compost, moss, and soil in container gardening. So I'm wondering, I'm not sure if I want to promote container gardening, but the second point I want to mention is one person in the audience there, he stated the city of Cedar Rapids came out and demanded that he remove all his container gardens for sanitary reasons. And I'm wondering if there was any affiliation to the asbestos concern there. Because, I mean, I know Master Gardeners are promoting container gardening, so I'm just raising those points.
Okay, yeah. Dennis, thanks a lot for your call. And who wants to tackle that?
I'll tackle it. Yes, container gardening, I think, is a great way if you have limited space to grow plants, either vegetables or flowers. And you do need to use a specific soil mix or soilless mix for containers. If the garden soil is too heavy, you get improper drainage and things just won't grow well. So you do need to come up with a soilless mix, which often does include vermiculite and perlite. However, if you're using horticultural-grade vermiculite, you don't have any of the problems. You mentioned the insulation-grade vermiculite, and yes, there could be some problems with that. So make sure you're getting horticultural-grade vermiculite, and you won't have any concerns there. Yes, we're looking at a number of alternatives. In addition to the vermiculite and perlite, there's core, which is a coconut husk fiber material that's sometimes used, but you need something that really drains well. And most of these are really relatively inert, so quite safe to use.
All right. And as far as getting rid of containers because of a sanitary concern, I'm guessing that may have been more of a visual concern, a neighbor concern.
I would suspect so as well. I don't know of any concerns as far as disease problems that would be associated with container gardening. Actually, there's fewer diseases in containers than in soil beds.
All right. Well, Dennis, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to join the conversation with your questions. Tom is on the line next. Hi, Tom.
I planted some raspberries and blueberries last year. Got them going real well. I even packed when I took my plants from my containers. I put the soil around them about 6-8 inches up the side. But over the winter, the rabbits have chewed the tops off. Do I have any chance of them coming back, or what do you think?
Well, the raspberries probably should. The blueberries might be a little bit more iffy. The only thing you can do is wait and see what they do. But what kind of raspberries were they? Were they red raspberries?
I think they were red, right? Yeah.
Okay. Well, they sucker from their roots. So if they got a good start last year, they should eventually come up. So I'm not too worried about them. The blueberries I am, because they don't have that ability to sucker. But you're just going to have to wait and see. I would probably just make a nice clean cut where they've been nibbled on and just wait for basically maybe a couple months.
Okay.
All right. Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And next up, we'll go to Faith in Lorville. Hello, Faith.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Well, thank you to you, too. What's your question?
We have a home over in Elkader, Iowa, northeast Iowa, and it has a quite large, well-established wildflower bed, about 5 to 6 years old, maybe, planted by the previous owners. And I sprayed last fall for a little bit of thistle infestation, but we'd really like to build that wildflower bed up and especially attract butterflies. And I wonder about burning off the old growth, when is best to do that, and then how best to beef up this wildflower population.
Well, obviously you want to burn on a nice, calm day. And probably, I would guess maybe around mid to late April would be a good time to do that. If they're native wildflowers, they're basically, for the most part, probably warm season plants. And so you could burn that probably around mid to late April. As far as maybe trying to encourage more plants, there are some companies that specialize in native plants where you can either buy seeds or maybe seedlings. For example, Ion Exchange in northeast Iowa in Harper's Ferry, they sell various native plants. You could try them. Also, Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota is another one that has both seeds and plants. So you have those options where you can actually buy things and plant those into the existing area.
And so it's always best to burn off in the spring.
That's typically the best time to do that, yes. But again, make sure it's a nice, calm day, because that debris can burn very quickly, very hot.
Right, right.
All right, Faith.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we'll go to Ralph on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
How deep are you supposed to plant the wild milkweed seeds so that you have a good crop for the butterflies?
A good rule of thumb on most any seed planting is you plant it about three times the depth of the width of the seed. So milkweed seeds are, so you put them down maybe a quarter of an inch to a 3/8 of an inch, something like that, and that should be good. You need to keep good even moisture until they get germinated and up and growing, or you could start them indoors and transplant them out too.
All right, Ralph, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Paul in Des Moines. Last fall, I had a large mulberry tree taken down and the stump ground in my front yard. I want to plant grass, mix of shade and sun during the course of the day. Will the roots or any residuals from the tree require me to prep the lawn in any special way to get the grass to take?
No,
he
it shouldn't.
Okay, and he is seeding. He's not sodding. So.
Yeah, they may have a problem with weeds coming up, but as far as the mulberry tree itself, no, shouldn't be an issue.
All right, and he says, any recommendations on type of seed?
Well, the amount of sun would determine what to plant. If it's essentially a sunny site where you have like 6-7 hours of sun, it's going to be essentially bluegrass with maybe a little perennial ryegrass in there. If it's a more shady area, then you want to use some of the finely fescues like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewing's fescue, because they're much more shade tolerant.
All right. Next, we'll go to Lynn on the line in Runnels. Hi, Lynn.
Hello. 30 or so years ago, we bought a bunch of walnut trees from the State Forestry Extension Service. I have no idea whether they're English walnuts or black walnuts, but I understand I need to be careful about what to try to grow around them.
Right. If they're a walnut of any type, they do produce a compound called juglone. And that juglone does inhibit the growth of some plants. For example, tomatoes are very, very sensitive to juglone. Now, not all plants are affected by it, but some are. So as far as a garden area, I would definitely want the garden area to be well beyond the drip line of my walnut trees.
Wow, that's a long way.
Well,
and actually the roots of the walnut tree can extend three times the drip line. So if the branches go out 20 feet, the roots could be out 60 feet. You need to be a long ways away, or grow things like, you can grow tomatoes in, say, 5-gallon buckets, just so the roots don't come in contact with the walnut roots.
Okay. And other trees, if we wanted to plant a birch tree or some other kind of tree within that drip line?
Well, I think most trees are going to need full sun. So if you're putting another tree under the drip line of any other large tree, it's not going to grow straight. It's going to try to get some sunlight. It's going to be crooked. So typically when you're planting other trees, you want an opening where they can go directly up. They're not being shaded by another tree. So you want to typically grow beyond the drip line, or plant beyond the drip line.
All right, Lynn, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we will take more of your questions. You can call 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Denny Schrock, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim is on the line next in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, I've collected moss from around my place there. I guess the crows like to look under it, and then I just try to save it for terrariums and that sort of thing. But unfortunately, I'm not sure how to keep it alive. Is there some secret?
Well, the basic secret for moss is it needs lots of moisture, humidity. It needs relative shade, usually. And it needs slightly acidic soil conditions. So if you provide somewhat acidic conditions, moisture, and low light intensity, it should grow.
All right. And if you just pick up moss that has sort of been ripped away, there's nothing in particular special that you need to do to get that to grow on that medium?
No, I've done that a number of times. Is I just, you know, go get a piece off of a tree somewhere and put it on top of the terrarium because it's broken loose. And yeah, as long as it's got relatively high humidity, it usually will take.
All right. Sounds good. Good luck with that, Jim. Next up, we've got Rock on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Rock.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I have a big, giant, beautiful mulberry that fruits and makes a horrible mess and smell. And we just been in our house about a year and a half, and we want to know if there's any way we can keep it from fruiting or if it's coming down this spring.
Well, the reality is the best way to do that would be to cut it down. That's unfortunate, but it would be nice if we could spray the tree and have it not fruit. And there were products on the market in the past, but they weren't very effective. And so really the only way to prevent that would be to go ahead and cut the tree down, unfortunately.
All right, Rock, probably not what you were hoping to hear, but we don't just give good news, right? Let's go back to the phone.
Just the facts.
Right, exactly. Now we have Brock on the line in Rock Island. Hi, Brock.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I've got two questions for you. One, we just purchased a house along a ravine. We were wondering what plants would be good to maintain soil retention along that ravine. Would be my first question.
Well, you could put in maybe some grasses if it's a sunny area. Some of the native prairie grasses, they have a deep root system. Maybe some of the willows because they do well in wet areas. And so those might be possibilities. Switchgrass, for example, some of the willows. You may need to put some other materials in there because the plant materials by themselves may not be enough if you have a lot of water going down there with a lot of force. But those would be some of the plants to put in.
or anything that's listed as a ground cover that rapidly covers the ground and will root down and hold it down. So you know, it depends on how wild you want it to be or how refined you want it to look, because there are a lot of ground covers that may have a little tighter look than some of the native plant materials.
Sure. Thank you. And then my second question was, we also were wondering about a decorative bush to plant near our foundation of our home that wouldn't cause any root damage.
I don't think that should be a big issue. Most of the shrubs are not going to damage the foundation. So if you have a solid foundation, it was done properly, I would base it on what you want it to do and how big you want it to get. As far as size, as far as height and spread, do you want attractive flowers in the spring, attractive fall foliage, that type of thing? So get some idea of what you want as far as ornamental characteristics and the size, and then just visit a garden center.
All right, Brock, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Chris in West Des Moines. Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
Just a question about dogwoods. When I go to Earl May and places like that, I often see a variegated dogwood, and I think it's red twig dogwood, mm-hmm. In shrub form. Mm-hmm. But my question is, would a flowering dogwood tree be a good candidate in, you know, in the Des Moines area?
Yeah, flowering dogwood trees are kind of iffy in central Iowa. We have some on campus, but the winter 2 years ago, not this winter, but the previous winter, when it got extremely cold, the trees that we have on campus are in a very protected site. But even though they are, they did suffer some winter diebacks. So they're kind of iffy in central Iowa. If you were to plant them, definitely look for a sheltered, protected location as best you can. But a crab apple would be much more reliable in Iowa.
If you're set on dogwood, you might want to take a look at coosa dogwood. Coosa is very much like the flowering dogwood, but blooms a couple weeks later and has the big white flowers too. So, and it tends to be a little tougher and hardier here in this part of Iowa. So look at the coosa dogwood.
Okay, coosa with a K?
K-O-U-S-A.
Okay. All right, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Chris. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Emily in Iowa City. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
What's your question?
excuse me. I have two quick questions. The first one is about my rosemary plant. I've had it in a pot that I've been bringing outside and inside for 3 years, mm-hmm. and it's still alive and it's still growing, but
that's
I
good.
Have done nothing with it. Like, I have not replaced any soil or done anything, and I was wondering if I need to do something with it.
It's been in the pot how long?
3 years.
Okay. Then you might want to repot it this spring, and I would just get a slightly bigger pot, maybe an inch or so in diameter bigger,
okay.
and just a well-drained commercial potting mix, and just pot it up maybe in April.
Awesome. My second question is, I'm in a rental, and so I would like to do some herbs, but I would like to do them in planters and not in the ground. Do you think it would be better to do each herb in sort of an individual pot, or do you think it would be better to do sort of several, like say basil plants, in sort of like a longer, narrow pot?
It's up to you. Either way is fine. Basil does grow very nicely in containers, so you definitely could grow that in a long
okay.
container.
And generally, the larger the container, the better growth you'll get out of them. So that's why I would suggest that maybe if you're wanting to grow several types of basil, putting three in one large pot than three smaller pots may be a little easier to manage, because they won't dry out quite as fast, although they like to have relatively dry soil. So herbs are usually pretty easy for container growing.
That's wonderful.
All right, Emily.
All right.
Yep, thanks
Thank
a lot
much.
For your call.
Mm-hmm.
866-780-9100. Amanda's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, good morning. I am new to the herb growing world, and I'm wondering if lemongrass grows decently in Iowa, or if there's anything special I should do, plant it from seed, plant it from bulb, sort of beginning with that.
All right. Lemongrass is one that's not hardy here in Iowa. So usually it's best to start with a started plant from a nursery or something like that. I've overwintered it in my greenhouse, which it'll do quite easily. You have to keep it from freezing. But starting from seed, you probably won't get full size that first year. So you may want to get a plant that's already started. But they grow quite well just in ordinary garden soil. We have the warmth of summer, which they love, but you'll have to protect them from frost and freezing.
great news. Thank you.
All right, Amanda, thanks a lot for your call. And let's do a couple of email questions here. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. This is from Cliff in Iowa City. He says, is there a general fertilizer that I can apply to my ornamental plants this spring? And when is the best time to apply something like this? Additionally, is there a natural or organic fertilizer that I can apply to my grass lawn?
There are various fertilizers, both organic and chemical. As far as a good all-purpose garden fertilizer, I would say a 10-10-10. And as far as putting it on, if I were applying it to, for example, a perennial flower bed, I would do that in the spring as the plants begin to emerge from the ground. You could apply that to, let's say, raspberries early in the spring. It's a pretty good all-purpose garden fertilizer, a 10-10-10. It's not a lawn fertilizer. But you do have organic choices there, too, so I would just go to my garden center and see what they have.
All right, and this one is from David in Des Moines. I'd like to get some established, meaning old and leggy, bushes that help screen the front door of a 1920 duplex from the busy street on which I live. You recently said to gradually remove the oldest stems so they get replaced by new growth. Mm-hmm. Can I cut the remaining old stems down to a lower height so they fill in a bit before their turns come up to go to the compost pile? And how low can I go?
Well, if you have something like a honeysuckle or a lilac or a dogwood, you definitely can go out there and select several of the largest, oldest stems and cut them back to near ground level. Now, those stems that remain, you can cut back a little bit, partially, but I would try to retain them as much as I could. So maybe you could remove a foot or two possibly at the top.
All right, this one's from Peg. How do I cut back a butterfly bush? I read that I should cut it back to 6 inches. Is that correct? Also, can you cut back bee balm, an old growth from last year?
Well, butterfly bush actually is a woody plant, but in Iowa, typically dies back to near ground level in the wintertime. So what I tend to do is wait and look for signs of growth at the base of the plant. And when I see that new growth, cut it back to that point. And usually it dies back very close to the ground. As far as bee balm, that's a perennial, and I would just cut it back to near ground level.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Lisa is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Lisa. Oh, I guess Lisa's not on the line in Grinnell. Let's talk to Arlen in Ankeny. Hi, Arlen.
Hello. Quick question. We've got a, by accident, several years ago, purchased a dwarf or cherry-sized tomato plant with yellow fruit. I do everything wrong. It stays in the same place. It comes up volunteer each year, is prolific, is resistant to everything. And I'm wondering, is there a standard red tomato that would have some of those characteristics? I try to rotate my regular tomatoes, and you know, it's a hit and miss proposition as to whether or not we have a good year with them.
Well, I think that's more maybe happenstance or circumstances most of your tomatoes are not disease resistant, and apparently for some reason this was getting by without getting disease, but I think that's more of a coincidence.
All right, so you should just enjoy your good luck.
Yes, okay. Enjoy your good luck.
Okay, we'll keep plugging away. It comes back every year.
All right.
Okay.
That's terrific. Thanks. Arlen, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's talk to Kathy on the road somewhere. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What's your question?
It has to do with my project this spring of cutting back. I have spirea, which that doesn't daunt me. That I know that I've got to cut those back. But I have about a 20-year-old red twig dogwoods. Can I cut them back, and how soon should I do that?
Well, yep. with the red twig dogwood, again, you kind of have two options. One, you could go out there, in the next, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks and cut the entire thing back to the ground, and they will send up new shoots. That's the more drastic approach. My preference would be to do it gradually, where you take out some this year, some next year, and finally more the third year. So you do it kind of gradually. It's much easier on the shrub, but either way is fine. Now, with the spireas, is it a pink flowering spirea or?
They are, yes.
Okay. Those typically, after maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years, they kind of usually look kind of straggly and unkempt.
Yes.
And a good way to rejuvenate those is to go out there in the next 2 or 3 weeks and cut them back to within like 2 or 3 inches of the ground. And that's
okay.
actually good for them. And they'll come back and they'll probably still bloom later on this summer.
Okay. Now, we also have Wigela. I don't know how to pronounce that. W-E-I-G-E-L-A. And I have a small one and I have a tall one. And that tall one is about 20 years. It hasn't been touched.
Okay.
Should I just do that like the red twig dogwood, or should I just whack it off?
Well, I don't think I'd whack it off. I would be probably inclined to maybe just take out a few of the larger, older ones early this spring.
Okay.
And do it more gradually, because it's not as vigorous as some of the spireas are. It's
okay.
not as tolerant as some of the other shrubs are. So I would do this much more gradually. You could also do some pruning, possibly after that big flush of bloom in the spring,
yes.
too, a little bit of pruning after that, too.
Now, when you say cut it back, or the select those to cut back, do I cut them off at the very base, or do I leave about 6 inches, or what is the definition
yeah.
of cut back?
I would cut them back as far as I can, as close to the ground as I can. Sometimes it's kind of hard to get in there with your pruning tools, but cut them back real close to the ground as far as you can.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for your call. It sounds like you have quite a bit of work ahead of you. Mike is on the line now in Riverside. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What's your question?
I was wondering if you had a source that I could go to. I want to build a solar thermal greenhouse.
Good question. We're kind of looking at each other.
Is there somebody in Fairfield that has built one?
I don't know on that.
I think it's time to turn to the internet, Mike.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of greenhouse suppliers out there, but I don't know of any who specialize in the solar types of ones.
Right. Well, I wanted to collect the heat and maintain it in a solar mass.
Right, right. And yeah. lots of times you can do that just by building in water collection or water tubs or slightly sinking the greenhouse so you don't have the walls. You're mostly having the roof surface as the exposed area. So eliminating much of the wall surface that's exposed to air and including things like rocks and water as a holding unit for the heat.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your call, and good luck in finding some detailed plans on that. Bob is on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My wife came home today with some romaine lettuce seedlings. Is it too early to get those in the ground?
That's one to ask the weather prognosticators at this point, but it's early for most years. We're having mid-April weather now. Is that going to continue? If so, we might be okay, particularly if you use some of these season extenders that we talked about earlier in the program. You might get by with planting out the romaine seedlings.
I would also say it's a good idea to harden off the seedlings anyway outdoors, where you put them initially in a shady location and expose them to light gradually over a week or 10 days. And if you harden them off for a week or 10 days, if there is going to be a frost or freeze, you can bring them in overnight. So you might want to do that and then maybe plant in 10 days.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. Final question, is it too late to prune oak trees, Richard?
I would say yes.
Okay. We'll probably get that question every week for the next month anyway, but yes is the answer
It's been warm recently, and I would say the insects might be out and about.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Denny Schrock, thank you.
Great to be here.
Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.